So I must admit that Cameline is somewhat of a new crop for me, but having seen that presentation, I can see that we're some way behind in Miscanthus. So let me start us through. So I just wanted to give you a quick one-slide introduction to Mendel Biotechnology, the company I work for. The seed side we call Mendel Bioenergy Seeds. Started off in the trait business about 10 years ago, discovering transgenes that get passed over to primarily to Monsanto for the row crop, traits such as drought tolerance, intrinsic yields, like that in the major row crops. But we're also got into bioenergy crops in the last about 3 years. Just to talk a little bit about biomass and why we see a need for a new crop like Miscanthus. This is a chart of the demand for biomass in the U.S. The orange part is mandated by the renewable fuel standard. So as much as the legislation can require. People to grow biomass crops to turn into fuel and the gas companies to sell it, then this is what's required on the bottom part here. Stacked on top of that is additional demand that we anticipate coming in from the power market. So this is mostly burning to produce electricity with a couple of different scenarios. And so if we kind of focus on this 2020 goal, where we're talking about 350 million dry tons expected demand. Well, where are we going to get that from? That's a lot of biomass. If you do an economic analysis to see where could that biomass come from, there's a bunch of different sources that could be used. Obviously, there's agricultural residues, corn stover and rice straw and various some what may be considered waste products from existing agriculture. But if you do an analysis of how much there is, where it is, how much it costs to collect it, how much you can sustainably remove, how much it costs to transport it, then this chart shows you in dollars. So, for example, example here, this 41, this is $41 per dry ton as an estimate, coming from corn stover, and so obviously that's a reasonable chunk. But if you actually want to get out to somewhere in the 350 million dry tons. Then that doesn't get you there. You need to have other sources. So forest residues, certainly the ones in green, coming from waste from logging activities, certainly a component to it. But that still is not sufficient. And so what we're convinced by is that you'll need some dedicated biomass crops, specifically high-yielding perennial crops, for various reasons that I'll talk about in the next few slides. But basically, wherever you see blue on here, that's where we're... We anticipate high-yielding perennials are cost competitive. So I want to introduce you to Miscanthus. It's already used in Europe for power generation. It's typically co-fired with coal, and so it's all a single genotype, a Miscanthus giganteus clone, and there's been work done over the last 8 or 9 years. In the U.S., demonstrating that it's highly competitive with switchgrass or other perennial crops at least in the Midwest area of the U.S. and possibly beyond that. Miscanthus is also an ornamental. It'll be in a lot of plantings around. If you're not familiar with it, then once you start looking out for it, then it's pretty much everywhere. It's very popular in the ornamental business. Certainly in China as well, it's also there's also Miscanthus genotypes that are used for paper production. So it's been commercialized to a relatively limited extent so far, and not in the U.S. on a biomass production scale. But this is just some data showing the yields the University of Illinois has observed spread across the state from north to south Illinois, getting yields averaging. Well above 10 dry tons per acre when you harvest it after a frost. This isn't peak biomass values. This is harvestable yields dry. And so, obviously, on the right hand side, if you're going to use it for power generation, then tons per acre is not really the relevant factor. It's the energy content. It's the it's the BTU's breaker that's a more appropriate unit. So where does Miscanthus come from? It's not native to the US, it's native to East Asia. There's various Miscanthus species. In general, Miscanthus is very closely related to sugarcane. In fact, you can cross these Miscanthus with sugarcane and generate fertile progeny. It's also therefore closely related to sorghum and corn and more distantly related to switchgrass. There are various Miscanthus species that are grown on the triploids, the sterile Miscanthus ex giganteus that's grown mostly in Europe and has been tested at the University of Illinois. That's a cross between two different species, Miscanthus aquaflorus and Miscanthus sinensis. This actual clone was found in Japan, naturally occurring cross. And then this is the genotype that's typically used for paper production. And there's an additional species that's adapted to more tropical areas. But you can see that the native range is very wide, from near tropical areas up to close to Siberian Russian areas. So there's certainly a lot of genetic variation out there for traits that would allow for good adaptation in the U.S. Just a few slides just to show the breeding program we have. You know, you can see lots of variation there in terms of plant size, in terms of flowering time. This photograph on the right here, this is a pretty impressive looking material. This is at our Chinese location. I would say that compare the grass to the meter scale on this bar. Don't really compare it to the guy that's a fairly small guy and he's standing in a ditch. So it's a little bit misleading. So in terms of the Mendel's breeding program for Miscanthus, the first and foremost trait we're going after is increasing yield. You'd think that driving the yield up is going to be a primary driver in the economics for Miscanthus or any other biomass, dedicated biomass crop. But obviously that yield has to be targeted to the regions that are anticipated to be the growing zones. Flowering time and senescence are also key traits that we're following through the breeding program. As a perennial, we obviously want enough nutrient remobilization from year to year to allow for sustained yields and not declining yields over time. And flowering time is important for likely for biomass production, but also for the invasiveness trait that I'll talk to in a few towards the end of my talk. Over time, there are options to do breeding towards more composition related traits, but that in some regards depends on the exactly what the use of the biomass is, whether it's used for power, whether it's a biochemical conversion to cellulose or a thermochemical. So those composition demands could be varied. Miscanthus is typically for biomass production is typically rhizome propagated, so it's a vegetative propagation of a sterile clone. And so you might ask, you know, why am I talking in this session about seed production? Well, we want to get onto seeds at the bottom of this, but if we look at what the status quo is right now, it's rhizome propagation. There are methods to do that. They are somewhat specific to Miscanthus, so in some ways the European commercial scale use of Miscanthus has had to invent some machinery to lift the rhizomes and then to plant those in an automated way. So that equipment is available. The problem with being a breeding company for Miscanthus is that it's one, we can't really breed on from a sterile clone very easily. The other is that if we came up with a great new plant that had all the characteristics we want, if we have to vegetatively propagate it, starting from one plant and ending up at thousands of acres, then that takes a very long time. And so with the rhizome propagated system. So in the meantime, we are actually more focused on a tissue culture approach, where you can actually do a vegetative propagation at a much faster rate than you could with rhizome propagation. But again, it's a very expensive technique relative to how you'd ideally want to propagate a crop, which is typically obviously by seed. So there's a definite cost advantage to getting to seed, and then you can just drop into existing equipment, existing farmer experience in many areas of the US that just aren't available for the top two forms of propagation. But the problems are that the the current seeded varieties that are available are all ornamentals. There aren't any high biomass seeded varieties that are on the market, and therefore there's no experience in how to grow it. There's no agronomic protocols. There's no protocols known about how you harvest the seed, how you treat it, how you get the crop established with it. But just to demonstrate one of the questions that comes up with seeded miscanthus, there's an assumption that it can't compete on yields with the available vegetatively propagated clones. It's still early days data for us in the US. There's a couple of photographs here. It's still we're in our second season, so we don't yet have our yield data in from this year. But visually, it looks competitive with the sterile clone in the places that we've grown it, and likely better than the switchgrass in the second year. On the right-hand side is really the only paper that's available on seeded miscanthus that's been published. Not a robust analysis of yield comparing the Giganteus clone with a seeded product, or seeded variety, but certainly an indication that it could be in the same ballpark. So we're convinced as a company that seeds really are the direction we're going to go to. But these are the sorts of questions that we need to deal with. The statement made earlier about Camelina seeds being very small, well, miscanthus seed, you probably can't see from very far away, but this is a miscanthus seed here in the palm of my hand. It's about 1 millimeter in length. It's about 60% of the mass of a Camelina seed, so it's even smaller. These are wind distributed seeds, so they're light and they're very fluffy, so there's a cleaning step that's required. We're just getting started on these experiments. I'm afraid I don't have any data to show. Just want to point out really the problems that we're going to have, and if there's people with experience with these types of crops that are interested in working on this, then please let me know, because we're just growing our activities in this area. You can see it's a very small seed. It obviously is going to need to be planted real shallow to be able to get up into the light, I would anticipate, before running out of reserves. But again, the same issues that were mentioned earlier about how do you keep it moist enough and get that crop growing up and established. Certainly pelleting is an approach that makes some sense for a small seeded crop like this. And so we've just got started with some experiments to test and make sure that we can get the plants to grow out of a pellet. That the pellet then would obviously allow us to use much more convenient planting equipment and lower seeding rates than if we were broadcasting the tiny seeds. Weed control is a definite issue to deal with. There are some registered herbicide products for miscanthus, but only on vegetatively propagated material. There's nothing at all registered for seeded stuff, so there's definitely work needed to be done there to identify which products are effective and can actually allow the seeded crop to come up above the weeds, and then going through the process of getting the herbicide companies interested in registering it for this crop for a market that doesn't yet exist. But one of the key issues whenever we mention and we talk about miscanthus coming from seed, the ornamental miscanthus has been known to escape in certain areas. This is the Miscanthus sinensis, and so we're very much aware of this issue, and it's an integrated part of our breeding program. There's been a weed risk assessment, a standard set of questions that can be applied to any crop. It was originally designed for importing ornamental plants into Australia, but various people have applied it. And so Jacob Barney and Joe De Tomaso in UC Davis recently published an assessment of the sterile clone, Miscanthus giganteus, going through these questions and answers, and their conclusion was that the summary conclusion was that it achieved an accept score. The rating system has a series of questions, and you based on various traits of the plant and what's known about the plant in other areas, and so depending on what the total score is at the end of running through those questions, then if it falls below one, you get an accept score, and the sterile clone of Miscanthus giganteus fell into that zone. this was a study that was looking at California agriculture, where switchgrass isn't native, and so they were also looking at switchgrass and another biomass crop, Arundodonax, that in this analysis. But the reason that it scored the accept is likely two major factors. One is that it's been grown in Europe for about 30 years with no examples of escapes occurring out of the experimental fields or the research or the production fields, and the fact that it doesn't have seed production. So if we're talking about making a seeded variety, can we rely on that sort of analysis? So one of the approaches that we're looking at is this functional sterility approach. And we're helped by the fact that many of the genotypes of Miscanthus flower fairly late in the season. And so this is a photograph from fairly far south in the US. You can see there was flowering and seed production fairly early on in the season. And so there's a scenario where we have a small production field that's under actively managed internally, so that we can ensure that there aren't escaping material out of that field, and then controlling that. But then that's just a seed production environment that's down fairly far south with a long growing season. And then that seed could then get moved up further north, maybe into this area, where the season is too short to get flowering. This is a photograph taken of a field site in Indiana, just in the last few weeks, just a week or so ahead of a frost. And you can see at this point there wasn't even the initiation of flowering in this particular genotype. So there's certainly this approach is certainly going to be feasible for Miscanthus. Obviously, as a commercial organization, we're going to want to expand the number of acres where our crops have high biomass but don't have an invasive potential. We want to expand that further south. So we've got lots of work to do there. But basically, we're committed to not releasing a variety that's invasive in the area that we market it. And so just to summarize at the end, we're developing Miscanthus products specifically for both the liquid fuel and the power generation markets over a range of geographies. And we might change the composition as it becomes clearer what's needed along there. So there's a whole range of internal collaborators at Mendel that I work with. And then there's some various people that we collaborate with on these projects. There's Mike Pereira at Granum Services. There's James Gillam, who I think might be in the audience here, Monsanto, we're working with closely. Miles Kuhn at FFR and the University of Illinois, we've been working with for some time. So thank you for your attention.
Sure. Time for a question or two.
When you talk about seeded Miscanthus, are you talking about sinensis?
So sinensis is certainly one option, but there are, you can make crosses between sinensis and sacrophloris. There's a range of different of options within our breeding program.
Do you have an idea how Miscanthus produces dry mass in relation to Arundo? You mentioned Arundo as per unit of water available.
So I don't have data that I can quote back to you that on a side by side comparison between Arundo and Miscanthus on terms of water use. I would say in general Arundo is a C3 crop and Miscanthus is a C4 crop. So you would expect immediately from that there would be a great difference in water use efficiency, with Miscanthus requiring less water per unit biomass produced. I would say in general both crops use a lot of water because they're producing a lot of biomass. So relative to another crop, they certainly use quite a lot of water. So if we were talking about an area where water supply was real limited, then either crop would be a concern from a sustainability viewpoint.